So we had an hour last week looking at the Irish Republic, and we were moving through the history of the Irish Republic. And today I can work sitting down. It's wonderful. And we're moving through very quickly. One important moment, especially from an economic point of view, was when the Irish Republic decided to join the European Economic Community, which will later, of course, be the European Union. This was considered to be necessary for the Irish economy to advance. However, this was a period where the economic crisis was very, very severe. In other countries too, but in Ireland particularly, unemployment rose from 7.9% in 1973 to 18.2% in 1985. It's very, very high. It's like Spain today, for example, really countries where it's very, very difficult to get a job. One of the results is that people continued to leave Ireland. They had an advantage. They speak English. That's useful if you want to get a job somewhere else. People continued to leave. And here we have a little cartoon, which is a joke. Black humour about unemployment, and you can see the gentleman who can't get a job because he only has a master and all the other applicants have a PhD, and this is for a job in McDonald's. Okay, and so he says, oh well, I better try Burger King. Yeah. Of course, it's an exaggeration. It's a joke about the situation of Ireland, which has a good education system, lots of people in universities, high quality, but not a lot of jobs. And this is before the Celtic Tiger period, which I mentioned last week, where for 10 years there will be more jobs and more investments. But we're still in the 1970s. One of the advantages of joining the European Economic Community for Ireland is the entry in the European Economic Community meant that funds were available, money to help develop the country. Some money came from the Common Agricultural Policy, or the Politique Agricole Commune, and this was to help the bigger farmers in Ireland. A huge amount of money, 44 billion euros, 44 milliards d'euros, went to agriculture in Ireland. Je suis pas sûr si c'est le chiffre en tout ou pour l'Irlande, alors je dis rien. 44 billion euros of European Union funds went to agriculture over 30 years. And the second reason they were happy, the government was happy to receive money from Europe, was for the renovation and rebuilding of rapidly aging or non-existent infrastructure, railways, roads, bridges. We're not in good condition, and there has been really a lot of big changes in quite a lot of Ireland were based on money from the European Union. And of course, if you build new railways or new bridges, this also creates employment. And so people have money to spend in the shops and so on, so it all helps the economy along. So there was a period of modernization, which was linked also to these new companies coming in. I mentioned computing and medical companies coming in and making the most of that. Of course, if you're a foreign company and you want to open a base in Ireland, the disadvantage is the weather. The advantage is the highly educated workforce, that people speak English, and also it's a very attractive country. People want to go to live there. I mean, foreign people. It's a very friendly place. So here are some examples. Water treatment plants. Donc ce sont des usines de traitement des eaux. Sewage works. De traitement des sewage. C'est ceux qui sortent des toilettes après qu'on les a utilisés, sewage. J'ai oublié le mot en français. Quel est le mot en français? Oui, voilà, tout à fait. Rail lines and bus services. Yes, all of these things have benefited from European Union financial supports. This is in the period in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and so on. This aid increased at the end of the 1980s, and to give you an idea, for 10 years from 1989 to 1999, Ireland's receipts, the money received from European Union structural funds, averaged around 2.6% of gross national product. Peut-être vous reconnaissez gross national product en français? Produit national brut, ça veut dire quelque chose? Produit national brut, tout ce qui est produit dans le pays. And so in this period, the money received from Europe was 2.6% of all the production of the Irish economy. So it's quite a lot, yeah. 2,6% de toute la production du pays, c'était la valeur de l'argent qui venait directement de l'Union européenne pour reconstruire les infrastructures. Oui, donc ça c'est du vocabulaire important. Gross national product, produit national brut, à ne pas confondre avec produit intérieur brut. On dit gross domestic product. Ok, je sais que c'est vous les économistes, pas moi. Alors, je vous laisse réfléchir à ça. Alors, voilà, donc une des caractéristiques importantes des années 80. Now, of course, the political problems and conflicts in the north of Ireland also have a big effect in the Irish Republic, because people are very interested in that. And so, after the hunger strike in the north of Ireland in the prisons in 1981, and the death of Bobby Sands, there is a biography of Bobby Sands on the PowerPoint. After the death of Bobby Sands, Ernest de Troula, of Bobby Sands and nine others in the 1981 hunger strike, there was a huge wave of anger in the Republic against Britain. Sinn Féin, the Republican political party, became much stronger in the south of Ireland. It was also much easier for the IRA to raise money in this period. So this was the political difficulty of the British government. Yeah. They refused to make concessions to the hunger strikers. The problem was, after that, the IRA, the military organization, found it easier to ask people for money because the political situation was different. Yeah. It's always political somewhere. The Good Friday Agreement, the important agreement in 1998. This was an agreement, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, an agreement between the government in London, all the most important political parties in the north of Ireland, and the government in Dublin, an agreement to try to stop the military conflict. Stop the military conflict by the IRA and the Protestant paramilitaries destroying their guns, by promising, the British government promised to work against discrimination against Catholics in the north, and they did to some extent. I mentioned the police. And the British government accepted for the first time that the opinion of the government in Dublin is important for questions affecting the north. This agreement, the Good Friday Agreement, was approved by a referendum in both parts of Ireland, in the north and in the south. This Good Friday Agreement was a compromise in that the different parties agreed, let's not talk about the question of a united Ireland. Now, this is a question we cannot solve for the moment, so we are not talking about this. We are talking about discrimination, stopping the military conflict, more cooperation with Dublin, but we're not talking about this question. We agreed not to talk about it. And it seemed to have some success. The military conflict ended, which is important. And here you have the leaflet of people saying, vote yes. The Good Friday Agreement is a good agreement. Please vote yes. So this is 1998, a referendum in Northern Ireland and another referendum in the south of Ireland. Here is a poster, rather a romantic view of the referendum. Yeah, it's your decision, and you can see the picture of a family looking at the sunrise or the sunset. Sunrise, I think, normally it should be the sunrise, yeah? Perhaps a little bit romantic for a decision about discrimination, military conflict and so on. It's a rather strange poster, but that was the poster they used. Democratic Unionist Party in the north of Ireland said no. This is one of the most loyal to the British throne, one of the strongest loyalist organisations. And you can see the little hearts with the British flag. Yeah, we love Britain. Yeah, we don't want any risk of Ireland, of the north of Ireland leaving Britain. Labour said yes. Here is a leaflet from Labour in Northern Ireland saying yes, you need to vote yes to the referendum because the Good Friday agreements will have great advantages. It will make it possible to end the violence. It will increase democracy, and altogether it is a just and reasonable compromise. Okay, a just and reasonable compromise. So here is the results of the referendum on this compromise. In the Republic of Ireland, a massive yes vote. 94.4% of people said yes, okay? So we can see that the compromise was considered to be worth a go, worth a try. That is that most people in the south of Ireland said, the first thing we want is the end to the military campaigns. Secondly, the British government has agreed to do something against anti-Catholic discrimination. Let's see, maybe they will, let's try it, etc. And in the north of Ireland, 71.1% said yes. Okay, so you can see it's more problematic in the north of Ireland. Who might say no in the north of Ireland? Two groups of people could say no. First of all, people who say the only really important question is the unification of Ireland. Ireland is one country, we want it unified. This compromise does not talk about unification, so we're not interested. And on the other hand, unionists, those who support the union with England, saying it's too big a compromise. We are allowing Dublin to give its opinion about the north of Ireland, and the north of Ireland is British and we don't want this. So these two groups of people said no, but 71.1% said yes. And so a new the agreement was implemented, and a new Northern Ireland Assembly was established in Belfast. Just like at this time, perhaps you remember, there is a new parliament in Edinburgh for Scotland and a new assembly in Cardiff for Wales. So also there was a new assembly in Northern Ireland for Northern Ireland. It was rather difficult. The Good Friday institutions were established, though they were suspended four times between 2000 and 2007. At some moments it was impossible to persuade the parties to work together. This is in the North, 1998. So let's come back south again. That was a part of the North's history, but it interests everybody in Ireland. And down in the south then, in 1999, the Republic joined the Euro. Now, people in France often ask me, did you not know vous saviez pas? Ah bah, comme ça, vous pouvez y aller. C'est beaucoup moins cher que l'Angleterre, et en plus on paye en euros. Il y a EasyJet pour Dublin, c'est à 40 euros l'aller, 40 euros le retour, hein, si on réserve bien à l'avance. I recommend. Okay, yeah, have some holidays. Not yet. The Republic joined the Euro. Now, people in France often ask me, why does England not join the Euro? England, yeah. There are many reasons. Firstly, I think there is no support for the idea in England. Nobody cares. But secondly, Britain does not depend on Europe economically. It has important trade with America, important trade with Europe, important trade with the Commonwealth, India, Canada, etc. So Europe is not so important economically. But for Ireland, Europe is very important. Because the Irish Republic does not want to be dependent on British trade. And I think I have the statistics, perhaps. No, c'était avant que j'ai parlé du pourcentage des commerces. Yes, it's just here. So 1999, the Republic joined the Euro. I mentioned this last week, in 2005, an international commission was invited to witness the decommissioning, the destruction of all IRA weapons. The IRA, of course, is an organization from the north of Ireland, but they depended on support in the south and money from the south. And so the IRA now believed that a political way forward was possible. The leaders of the IRA did not say, we were wrong. They said the military conflict was unfortunately necessary, but now it is possible to move forward politically. And I mentioned already small breakaway groups, the petit groupe de scission, like real IRA and continuity IRA, continued to believe that continuing the armed struggle for a united Ireland was justified. But these are very small groups these days. And here is an example of a poster saying no decommission. Yeah? Donc c'est une affiche qui, une murale en fait, une peinture murale, qui s'oppose à l'idée de destruction des armes de l'IRA, des armes de l'IRA. Why? Well, they say, remember 1969, when many, many Catholic houses were burnt by radical Protestants. See? We need the IRA to defend us. That's what this poster is saying. And this is today. Now this is 2004. A few, it's a small group, a few argued that the armed struggle should continue, like the painters of this mural, who remind passers-by of the events of 1969 and the burning of dozens of Catholic houses by loyalists. Bombay Street was destroyed by fire in 1969. Oh, okay, so here is an example of a small breakaway group, Real IRA, who planted their biggest bomb quelques années auparavant, en 98. 28 people were killed. A warning was given, but it was not clear enough to evacuate the right area. So that was in 1998, so at the moment of the compromise, this bomb, the aim of the real IRA was to destroy the compromise by this terrorist attack. Let's move forward to today, or almost today, 2005. Progress in the European Union. In 2005, the Irish language was recognized as a working language by the European Union. Euro MPs and administrators who want to work in Irish may do so. And there you have the slogan, make Irish an official European Union language. Je crois qu'il y en a 9 maintenant, ou 13 langues officielles. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. This slogan in Gaelic, Bioth Gaelche Inateanga Afihul Din. I don't know. I can't speak Irish, but there you go. Again, you remember the importance of Irish is in many ways political more than linguistic. All of the Euro MPs speak excellent English and can read in English. It's not a practical problem, it's a symbolic political problem. They're saying the reason that Irish is so weak is because of English colonialism over 500 years. And so it is important for us to use Irish as a symbol of we really exist. And the European Union agreed it was possible. Economic crisis of the last 2 years, 2010, 2011, was very strong in Ireland. It was a situation almost like Spain and Greece. Some of my colleagues who work in universities in Ireland, suddenly they found that many of them lost their jobs. Moi, je connais les universités parce que j'ai des collègues là-bas. Et tout d'un coup, ils disent, allez, on ferme le département d'histoire, on n'a plus d'argent. On ferme notre département, là. And people had no jobs anymore. So very, very radical cuts. Beaucoup plus que ce qu'on vit en France, des réductions de budget, etc. Mais bon, on n'a jamais vu en France que voilà, on ferme des facs parce que Don't call. And here is one of the slogans, the headlines at the time, 3 weeks to save Ireland. So a very dramatic situation and very controversial. Yeah. Should the government nationalise the banks, or should the government give the banks money to continue? Big argument, of course. Other questions in Ireland today. Importance of the Irish language. Here you have a website from the biggest Irish radio, from RTE, and this is the Gaelic channel. And you can see that the the programmes are described both in English and in Irish, just to give you an idea of that. Now, of course, Ireland has been a country of emigration for a long time. First of all, Irish people emigrated to England. The advantage of emigrating to England is you can come back every year. It's not so far away. And very often, for hundreds of years, Irish people went to England in the autumn to help with the agriculture, and then they went home again. Once the Industrial Revolution began, the Irish went over to England to build the canals and then the railways. And in the 19th and 20th century, many, many women went to England to work as domestic servants. Millions. At several moments, there were more women immigrants to England than men at the end of the 19th century. The idea was you go for 10 years to work as a domestic servant. You can send money home to your family. Very classic immigrant situation. And then if you're lucky, you find somebody who you want to marry. And because it's no fun being a domestic servant in general. Yeah, I don't recommend it. About the question of the country of emigration, in 1840, the population was bigger than today. The population was more than 8 million. In 1851, it was 6.5 million. This is after the famine, or during the famine. And after the famine, emigration and economic backwardness brought it right down. 1941, 4.3 million. Yeah? So this is the terrible results of the famine and then emigration, massive emigration. Yeah. And so this is why you can find Irish pubs in Belfast, in Berlin, in Paris, in Madrid, everywhere. And today, the population of the whole island of Ireland is still only 6.2 million. So this is a country in Europe whose population today is lower than 160 years ago, 170 years ago. There are not many countries like this. Of course, in general, the populations of countries have been rising in Europe. An exceptionally difficult situation linked to all that history that we've been going through. However, naturally enough, Irish emigrants around the world have often kept their identity and some of their culture. This is a photograph which I took when I was on holiday in Norway, in Oslo. And there is the St. Patrick's Day Parade. 10 years in Oslo, donc la parade pour la Saint-Patrick, le dixième, c'est le dixième fois qu'ils le font tous les ans à Oslo, en Norvège. It's a long way, and it's not somewhere you think of as full of. And it says, "Join us for a day of fun, music, and craic." Craic is friendly conversation. In Irish, it's a work, fun, friendly conversation. Leaving from Jambatognet. That's Norwegian, at 1 o'clock. Okay, so this is just an example to show that where Irish people go, very often they keep their identity and culture. In America, if you go to New York and you talk to people, you say, "Oh, anybody Irish here?" And somebody says, "I'm Irish." Say, "Where were you born?" "New York." "Where were your parents born?" "New York." "Where were your grandparents born?" "New York." "But you're Irish." "Yes." Okay, very, very strong roots, yeah? But there's something very specific about that. There are other groups who do this as well, but not all groups. For example, Italian immigrants in England, normally they don't say, I'm Italian, if it was their grandfather or their great-grandfather who moved. Of course, you have a choice. My great-grandparents were all Irish, but I don't normally say I'm Irish. I could if I wanted to, but my parents don't say they were Irish. In fact, my parents said, we don't like Irish people. And so, but all your grandparents are Irish. Yeah, so, but you know how stupid parents can be. Yeah, you know this. Okay. So, not your parents, everybody else's. Okay. And of course, Irish traditional dancing has become famous around the world. Si vous avez assez d'argent pour les billets qui sont très chers, vous avez vu à Paris, il y a eu des grands spectacles de danse. À la Villette, en mars, il y a un gros festival de musique celte. À partir de 45 euros la billet, quand même. Okay. Dancing. And of course, Irish traditional music has become more and more famous around the world. The Chieftains are since the 1960s, very, very popular traditional Irish music group. Say again? The Corrs, of course, yes. And in a more modern style, the Pogues, who sing traditional music in a sort of punk rock way. The Dubliners, the Pogues. More modern sort of punk style. The Corrs, of course, and many more. Sinead O'Connor, the Cranberries. That's not traditional music, really, but it's very Irish. It's very Irish. Very strong Irish accent when she sings. Very, very strong Irish accent when she sings. Okay, so going back to the politics, what does the Parliament look like in Ireland, in Dublin? Well, the Rashtash, yes, is a bicameral parliament, bicameral à deux chambres, comme est traditionnel, hein, en France, en Italie, aux États-Unis, bicameral. Not always, you know that the assembly in Edinburgh and in Cardiff are monocameral, only one chamber. A bicameral parliament consisting of the President of Ireland, the Upper House, Seanad Aran. Vous voyez un peu le mot Sénat dans Seanad, and the Lower House, Dáil Éireann, the Dáil. I'm not promising that my pronunciation is very good. So the Upper House, the Seanad, is composed of 60 members. But it's a rather unusual system. They are not all elected. 11 of the 60 members are nominated by the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister. Yes, okay. 6 of them are elected by universities. Why not? And 43 are elected by public representatives. C'est un petit peu comme si les maires les élisent. C'est pas le peuple qui les élise, c'est indirectement. J'ai oublié qui élit les sénateurs en France. Est-ce que c'est tout le monde ou est-ce que c'est indirect? C'est indirect, c'est ça? Oui, voilà, donc c'est la même idée. Yeah. I always forget about the country I live in. Yes, so this is the situation of the Upper House. Now the Upper House, la Chambre supérieure, like in many countries, their job is to revise legislation or amend legislation. They don't normally begin laws. The Lower House, the most important one, the Dáil, or the Dáil, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, in fact, 166 members elected under a system of proportional representation. Proportional representation, that means you vote for a party, and if one party, say Fianna Fáil, has 25% of the votes, then they have 25% of the members of Parliament. Proportional representation. This is not the system in England. Absolutely not the system in England. In England, every town has a separate election and there is one winner in each town. So it's possible in England to be a political party with 25% of the votes and zero members of parliament. because if you have 25% in every town, it's not enough to get a Member of Parliament in England. But in Ireland, proportional representation. Parliamentary elections must be held at least every 5 years. And here you have the official, le dernier paragraphe, c'est pas très important, c'est le nom des chambres où habite le président et où se réunit le Parlement. But it's not really essential. Leinster House, if you go to Dublin, is the place where the Parliament is. I have time to talk about one or two other questions. First of all, education. Education in the Republic of Ireland. Growth in the economy since the 1960s has driven much of the change in the education system. In all European countries, this is the same. Today, a modern economy, we need lots of computer experts, lawyers, architects, accountants, managers, and so we need more universities. And since the 1960s, the number of people going to university has gone up like that. This is probably why you're here, some of you. It's good for me, I have a job. Education in Ireland is free at all levels, including what they call in Ireland college, which we call in England university, but only for students applying from the European Union. There are no tuition fees, frais de formation, like there are in England. You remember I told you that in England today you can pay 13,000 euros every year. Have you got 13,000 euros ready? However, in Ireland, the student services fees, donc on peut vraiment traduire frais d'inscription cette fois, is more than in France, yeah, 1,500 euros. Donc c'est la même chose, c'est beaucoup d'argent. En même temps, c'est pas comme 13,000 euros non plus. C'est pas le même problème. Many people can find 1,500 euros. These are fees which students are required to pay on registration at university to cover examinations, insurance, and registration costs. So that's the general situation. Now, most schools teach in English, not in Irish, except in particular schools, Gaelscoileanna, I think. These are schools in which Irish is the working language. So if you are a parent, you can, in many parts of Ireland, you can choose. I want my children to go to a school where they will learn mathematics and history and geography and arts in Irish. And here you have an example. Bun Scoilen Uyr. And their slogan, I have no idea. And notice it says underneath, Irish medium, primary school, nursery, and after school club. So Irish medium, c'est à travers l'Irlandais. À travers la langue irlandaise. Medium, c'est le moyen de communication. So if you send your children to this school, they will learn mathematics, but in Irish. They will learn French, but from Irish. They will learn history in Irish. Yeah, so everything is in Irish. Well, it's a primary school, so yeah, history is not so... science in Irish, everything in Irish. So this is an option. There's another one. And here you have the statistics. How many people go to the Irish language schools? About 50,000. So this is 50,000 children. The whole population is 4 million, 4.5 million. So there must be 1 million children, or 800,000 children. So it's like 7%, 8%, something like that. So it's not tiny, but it's not a majority. There are currently around 50,000 pupils or students total from both inside and outside the Gaeltacht. Je expliquerai le Gaeltacht dans un instant. Attending Irish language schools. And this is 298 Irish language schools at primary level. Donc les écoles élémentaires, il y en a 300 écoles en langue irlandaise. Donc c'est pas non plus rien. And 72 schools at post-primary level, donc 72 collèges. Most of them are in the Republic of Ireland, but there are a few in Northern Ireland. For example, in Dublin, there are 31 Irish medium primary schools and 8 secondary schools, while in Cork there are 22 primary schools and 8 secondary schools. This program of Irish language schools has also inspired other similar language immersion projects in Europe, such as the Scottish Gaelic and Manx schools. Scottish Gaelic, donc en Écosse. Manx, c'est la langue régionale de l'île de Man, qui est une toute petite île qui est liée au Royaume-Uni, à côté de l'Angleterre. Vraiment pas très grand du tout. But they have some. And this is a Manx language preschool on the Isle of Man. It's a very small island with I don't know what the population is. Il y a peut-être 20,000 personnes dans toute l'île. Okay. And a few of them speak this language, yes. Vous savez que en Bretagne, il y a des écoles primaires en breton. Je ne sais pas si ça monte en Bretagne ou si ça descend plutôt. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. In Ireland, they have an advantage because the government thinks it's very important. Yeah, so that's an advantage. Yeah. Whereas in France, the government doesn't think it's important. Okay. Now, big change in 1973. The requirement to pass the Irish language in order to receive a second level certificate was dropped. C'est-à-dire que jusqu'en 73, si vous n'aviez pas la moyenne en langue irlandaise, vous n'aviez pas le bac ou l'équivalent. Vous voyez, c'est une insistance très forte. And in 1973, they said, okay, Irish is the same as the other subjects. You are not obliged to have a pass in the Irish language in order to get the second level certificate. However, all schools must teach Irish. Donc, irlandais en tant que langue seconde. Il y a cette minorité d'écoles qui enseigne tout à travers l'irlandais, mais toutes les écoles enseignent l'irlandais comme une des matières. It's obligatory. A student attending a school which receives public money, all state schools, must be taught the Irish language. A few students can apply for permission not to learn Irish, but it's quite difficult. For example, if you have lived for a long time abroad, if you arrive from America or Italy, you can, if you wish, refuse to learn Irish. And also, students with learning difficulties. Ça c'est l'expression qu'on utilise aujourd'hui. C'est ce qu'on disait il y a 30 ans. On disait des handicapés mentaux. C'est plus l'expression qu'on utilise en anglais. On dit students with learning difficulty, and these are also not necessarily obliged to learn Irish. So at the bottom you have the statistic, how many students learn Irish at school as one subject, all of them. Yeah, 700 to 800,000 students are taught Irish. So is this enough to protect the future of the Irish language? It's difficult to say. The situation of the Irish language is stronger than 20 years ago, but not a lot. It's a very, very slow rise. It's still a difficult situation. Around the world, people of Irish origin work at keeping the language alive. And this is a poster from Vancouver in Canada. Say, come if you want to learn Irish, you can come to this school, and you can find Irish language classes in Paris, many countries across the world. Yeah, so there is a desire to maintain the Irish language, and they will probably maintain it. I would think they quite a lot of them. So going back to education, here you have statistics on the primary schools in the Irish Republic and the type of schools. Notez bien que école laïque. Zero. Yeah? That's not a problem. Yeah. Exactly zero. Perhaps there might be some private secular schools. Mais il n'y a pas de demande non plus. Hein, les gens, il faut beaucoup de temps pour expliquer à des gens en Irlande qu'est-ce que c'est qu'une école laïque. Parce que ça me semble très étrange. So you can see the situation. Roman Catholic schools, 2,988. Okay, strong number. Church of Ireland, 190. Presbyterian, c'est d'autres types de protestants. 18. Methodist, 1. Jewish, 1. Muslim, 1. Ok, on peut penser que la religion catholique n'est pas menacée en Irlande. Multi-denominational, 10. Il y a une dizaine d'écoles qui essaient de mettre ensemble les protestants et les catholiques. Ok. So, you can see a very strong presence. However, like in other countries, the number of people practicing the Christian religion, and here the Catholic religion, the number of people practicing going to Mass every Sunday is going down quite a lot. And so quite often, although these are Roman Catholic schools, they are not very strongly, they are not rigid about religion like they were 30 years ago. And so it's much more relaxed these days. They are obliged, because if you want to teach the Catholic religion in school, you must be flexible, because the children are not ready to listen to the old-fashioned, who loves you? God loves me. Why does he love me? Because the old-fashioned catechism, children are not interested. They won't accept it anymore. So it has to be discussion and much more flexible. The press, so just have a little time for the press. The press in the Irish Republic. The most prestigious newspaper in Ireland, the Irish Times, is an Irish daily newspaper launched on the 29th of March, 1859. Yeah? A nice old newspaper. We like old newspapers in Ireland as well as in England. And this is the most prestigious. C'est l'équivalent de Le Monde. C'est-à-dire que Le Monde, en principe, en effet, relativement confiance, c'est une journal solide. And the Irish Times is important. It has full-time correspondents in Washington, Paris, Berlin, Beijing, Brussels, and London. And every day it sells about 100,000 newspapers. Ils réussissent à faire de l'argent surtout par la publicité. Parce que c'est pas énormément de lecteurs, mais c'est les lecteurs qui ont un peu d'argent. En général, alors les publicitaires veulent bien payer. Notice that the Irish Times is not owned by the Times in London. It just has the same name, the Times, but it's not the same company at all. And there's the Irish Times. This is a recent example of the Irish Times. Et on n'est pas surpris de voir que la première page, c'est sur les coupes dans les budgets sociaux. Parce que ça a été que ça depuis 3 ans en Irlande. Cut, 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 cut. Budget to cut social protection spending by 700 million euros. Another Irish Times. Tout récent, là, c'est juste avant que Obama gagne à nouveau les élections. Il a gagné, vous savez. Obama holds lead in key states. Dans des états clés, Obama tient son avance sur les autres. And there you see the gift of the iPhone 5. Yes, very, very recent here. The second important newspaper, which sells more, it's the biggest selling Irish daily newspaper, is the Irish Independent, formed in 1905. Donc, n'est pas lié au The Independent à l'ordre. C'est pas du tout la même chose. Ça s'appelle la même chose. Formed in 1905. It is the biggest selling Irish daily newspaper. It was originally a Catholic nationalist newspaper. Il a été fondé en 1905, qui est la même date que la fondation du parti républicain Sinn Féin, hein, par ailleurs. It was originally a Catholic newspaper, and it's very strong. Something interesting, which is new, is that over the last 3 years, the Irish Independent has published every Wednesday a supplement in Irish. So the newspaper every day is in English, but every Wednesday you have a few pages in Irish. And so you can see it's important to them. Foinze, I think it's pronounced, an Irish language supplement free of charge every Wednesday, with a circulation of 195,000. Yeah, so this is part of the desire to keep the Irish language alive. There's the Irish Independent. Just after the elections in 2011, et le titre dit Cowan digs in after election bloodbath. Alors, un des dirigeants de Fianna Fáil essaie de se maintenir après le bain de sang lors des élections. Alors, c'est des mots forts. Hein. Ils ont perdu un nombre de sièges, mais historiques. Ils ont perdu les trois quarts ou quelque chose d'énorme de le siège. And they lost the government. And you can see he doesn't look very happy. The Irish Independent again, this year. Nous n'avons plus rien à donner, we've no more to give. Donc encore sur les coupes dans les budgets sociaux, ça y est, ça suffit. Okay. Most savage austerity budget yet takes 1,000 euros a year from most family incomes. Donc la plupart des familles perdent 1,000 euros par an dans les dernières coupes dans les allocations. So it's really something really pretty big. Yeah? You can imagine if your family lost 1,000 euros a year, that's money. Yeah? That's important amounts of money. And here you have the supplements of the Irish language supplement every Wednesday so you can continue practicing your Irish. More popular newspapers, although not the biggest sellers, the Irish Daily Star. A tabloid newspaper, and this is like the British popular newspapers. It's not so serious. It was quite recent. It was first published on the 29th of February 1988, and it is the Irish version of the London tabloid, the Daily Star. It does, however, contain more Irish content than any similar Irish editions of the UK national newspapers. And the slogan of the Irish Daily Star is "Better because we're Irish." Okay, and I'll give you a couple of examples. So these are the not-so-serious newspapers with more sports, more gossip, more sex, etc. And here you have. Encore une fois, le titre, c'est sur les banquiers et les réductions dans les budgets sociaux. D'abord, ils ont cassé l'Irlande, maintenant ils vont casser Berlin. C'est la référence à une chanson de Leonard Cohen. First we'll take Manhattan, then we'll take Berlin. Et l'autre chose qui est très irlandais, c'est que le sous-titre c'est Wanker bankers put entire future of euro at risk. Le premier mot est un insulte très fort que j'ai jamais vu dans un journal. En général, c'est trop vulgaire pour mettre dans un journal. Et en Irlande, on le met en première page. C'est un petit peu surprenant. C'est l'équivalent de mots qu'ils ne mettraient pas en première page dans les journaux en France. Parce que c'est en général. So they seem to be more relaxed about that in Ireland. More again, you can see that this is a more popular and not so serious kind of newspaper. There, in this case, the headline is about golf. It's about the sport of golf. There's another one. Ça c'est mon préféré. C'est personne n'a donné des pilules d'ecstasy aux kangourous dans la discothèque. Voilà. Ça c'est la première page du journal. Comment ça, le kangourou dans la discothèque? Voilà. Et en dessous, c'est l'homme qui a organisé la fête pour son anniversaire nie que l'animal était drogué. Voilà. This is not something which people do typically in Ireland. It's just sells newspapers. Finally, I know we've almost finished here. An Phoblacht is the official newspaper of Sinn Féin, the Republican Party in Ireland. Published just once a week, and claims to sell 15,000 copies every week. The Republican for Black, then the official newspaper of Sinn Féin, so a political newspaper. And there you go. They are looking about the history of Ireland, the spirit of 1916, the rebellion of 1916. And Sinn Féin will resist discrimination by governments. Right, and I'm afraid I don't have time for radio and television, so I'm going to stop there. I think that's enough. Thank you for listening right to the end. And